Are you exhausted by coronavirus news? Us too! So join us this week as we take a break and discuss Trump's new DNI from the great state of Texas, the awesome news of how the USA is publicly supporting Taiwan to China's chagrin, the response to Ayatollah Khomeini's high five to Hitler's final solution, and a personal hero of mine flies beyond the pearly gates to a warm welcome reception. All this and more on this week's edition of World News Brief by CGM Radio. And welcome to this Friday, May 22nd, 2020 edition of World News Brief, where we bring you, our amazing listeners, a wrap-up of the most impactful and relevant news from around the world from the past week. I'm your host, Winston R. Holland. Delighted to be with all of you guys as always. I can't tell you how saddened I was when I first learned that a personal hero of mine tragically was diagnosed with cancer, and then just this past week died. He was a man that I highly respected, that I would often listen to and wonder, how is it possible that someone can actually be that smart? How is it possible that someone could elucidate ideas in such a way that it's brilliant and charming and and even loving, like in a loving way, a guy that has so much knowledge and brilliance and eloquence, and yet he can communicate it in such a loving and caring way as well. Who is this man that I so highly esteem, you may be asking? His name is Ravi Zacharias. And Ravi Zacharias was one of the most prominent and famous Christian apologists in the world. And I can't tell you just the incredible, just losing this guy was really losing a gem in the kingdom of God. It's just like when we lost Nabil Qureshi a few years ago. What an incredible Christian apologist and just warrior for the faith, standing up to radical Islam, even speaking out against Islam itself, much to his own endangerment. I mean, that's not a safe thing to do by any stretch. But this week, we're remembering Ravi Zacharias. This is from Christian Broadcasting Network. Well-known author, evangelist, and Christian apologist, Ravi Zacharias died Monday morning at his home in Atlanta, following a brief battle with bone cancer. He was 74. Zacharias was a 17-year-old skeptic, an unbeliever recovering from a suicide attempt, when he heard the words of Jesus in John 14:19, "Because I live, you will live also." The truth of Scripture gave Zacharias hope, and he gave his life to Christ, promising to leave no stone unturned in his pursuit of truth. Across the decades, Ravi ministered on a global scale and even shared the truth of Jesus several times on the 700 Club. Quote, "How wonderful to know that when the Holy Spirit speaks to you and to me, he enables you to understand yourself, to die to that self because of the cross, and brings the real you to birth when you're crucified with Christ. Nevertheless, you live, not you, but Christ lives in you," quoting Galatians 2:20 there. I think that's so unique that one cannot escape the ramifications. And I can certainly relate to this. When I was 19 years old, I put my faith in Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior, and experienced a change in me and an understanding that is just, that it's almost inexplicable. It's inexplainable. The incredible change that I experienced and internally, and of course, changed the entire trajectory of my life. Zacharias began preaching in India at the age of 19. Years later, he was invited to speak at the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association in Amsterdam, where he addressed 4,000 other speakers. This guy really was. He was a leader of leaders, a speaker of speakers. It would be another turning point for him as he began to seriously consider the critical need of apologetics to remove the intellectual barriers that kept many from considering the truth claims of Christ. If you're not familiar with what Christian apologetics is just a fancy word that stands for defense. So it's from the Greek word apologia, and it comes from the scripture in 1 Peter 3:15 that says, "Always be ready to make a defense to everyone who asks you to give an account for the hope that is in you, yet to do this with gentleness and respect." And boy, as we're going to see here in just a minute, we're going to see how Ravi Zacharias did just that. I'm telling you, you will not want to miss this audio that I have from Zacharias responding to a skeptic, asking him, "Why are you so afraid of subjective moral reasoning? You just wait for this. It's really, really good." In 2017, Zacharias' vision to establish an apologetics training center in the U.S. was realized with the launch of the Zacharias Institute in Atlanta. He spent nearly 50 years advancing the Christian faith and addressing life's greatest questions of meaning, morality, and destiny with eloquence and grace. I promise you, as you'll hear in just a second. So in honor and tribute to this incredible man of God, I want to share this video at a Q&A session where an audience member asks him, "Why are you so afraid of subjective moral reasoning?" Now, if you're not familiar with that kind of terminology, it's just basically the idea that since we are material beings and since that we do not have a soul, since there is not a God, there is the most consistent position to take regarding morality based off of that view is that there are no morals, right? How does matter and molecules, even my brain matter, how does any of that dictate to me right and wrong, right? The only way that there's any type of objective moral standard by which we are all subjected to is it has to be beyond all of us. Right, it has to be a standard beyond us that we're accountable to. Otherwise, it's just your opinion, my opinion. The Allied powers think the extermination of the Jewish people is wrong. The Axis powers think it's right, and actually think the moral thing to do is to exterminate millions of people and replace all of them with this blonde-haired, blue-eyed Aryan race. I mean that's where subjective moral reasoning takes you. Okay, this one side thinks this is right, this other side thinks this is right. Okay, I guess whoever has the most power gets to employ their morality. So listen to this. Like I said earlier, his answer here perfectly displays his brilliance, eloquence, and again his love. And how he responds to this young man. So let's listen in to the great Ravi Zacharias.
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Let's leave aside Christianity and historical examples for a second. All night you guys have been grappling with issues like morality and, you know, what is right, what is wrong, and meaning. But my question is simply, why are you so afraid of subjective moral reasoning? I mean, do you think that we're all just going to start raping and pillaging just because we don't have a book to tell us what to do? I mean, are you afraid of that? Like, I'm not, because that's not going to happen. And that, yeah, Nazis were bad, but there were Christian Nazis and there were atheist Nazis. So I don't see, what are you so afraid of?
This guy is clueless.
Do you lock your door at night?
Yeah. Sure.
You know, I hear what you're saying. Sounds very cavalier, though. My goodness. If we weren't afraid of all of this, we would not be in a national debt.
The billions... China is secular.
Sorry?
China is secular.
Sorry?
China is secular.
That's right. What does that mean?
I mean, they're not raping and pillaging, and neither are we.
Oh, my, oh, my, oh, my, oh, my. Oh, my. Have you read what happened during the Red Guards Rebellion? Have you read what happened during the Boxer Rebellion? Do you know who has killed more people in the 20th century than China and Russia? 60 million apiece? Wow. It makes the Holocaust seem tame. The 20th century became the bloodiest century in history. And the reason it became the bloodiest century in history I can see is you could just see the weapons of our warfare were piling up, and there was no guiding principle to take us anywhere. Now, in a perfect world, yes, we don't need to be afraid. Have you seen what happens in our courts of law, where people supposedly love each other, and all that comes about in hate and vitriol and damage? I don't think the question is fairly stated as what are you afraid of. I'm just saying it is basically unlivable. I didn't conclude that. An atheist like Jean-Paul Sartre concluded it. We killed more people in the 20th century than the previous 19 put together. And your question is, what are we afraid of? The fact of the matter is, if morality is purely subjective, then you have absolutely nothing from stopping anybody for being a subjective moralist to choose to just zing one through your forehead and say, that's my answer. You know, how do you stop that? Obviously, you don't believe that's the way it should be, neither do I. So it's not a case of what am I afraid of, it's a case of the fact that if you're willing to say to me that moral reasoning can be purely subjective, I just say to you, look out, you ain't seen nothing yet if everybody believed what you did. Do you know, funny, interesting, when I was in the Soviet Union, former Soviet Union, Stalin eliminated 15 million of his own people. 15 million of his own people. And at the center for geopolitical strategy, you know, they didn't want to even name his name and so on. His daughter, Svetlana, made the comment, it is quoted both by Malcolm Muggeridge in his writings and by historian Paul Johnson in Modern Times. Svetlana was standing by the bedside of her father before he died. She said the last thing he did was clench his fist over the heavens one more time, put his head back on the pillow, and he was gone. This is his daughter raising the question, whatever got into my father to have that kind of hatred and hostility? And when 15 million were killed of his own people, it is interesting that the faculty members and the general who chatted with me there, my wife will tell you, sat around the table with tears in his eyes when he watched what had been done to his own country by his own leadership.
Wow. That was all from memory, by the way. that was just a question from the audience, all from memory. There was such an amazing combination of disciplines that he was able to display in a short amount of time, especially knowing his history. Knowing the history of the 20th century, I think just the longer I go and the more that our own country and many other countries just sink further and further into the pit of socialism, understanding what socialism, true socialism, like they experienced in the 20th century, and what we're seeing in different parts around the world now, and what many, even here in the United States, are trying to implement, what the outcomes are of that. But then you go deeper than that into the philosophical underpinnings of it all, and you realize just how, if we do not have objective morality, there's like the kid that was asking those questions saying that, you know, he's like, oh, I believe what Hitler did was bad. Well, how can you say that if there are no if there is no morality? You can say, I don't like it. I wish you didn't have it. I prefer a society where, you know, everybody gets along, and kind of the libertarian principle of you don't hurt me, I don't hurt you, and we kind of base our laws off of that or whatever. I mean, those are all great, and they all sound great, but without, if society does not have an objective moral standard by which they are subject to, and if society does not have the fear of God within them, then you don't have a free society. Because if the society does not have a fear of God, they do not choose to govern their behavior. Their behavior then becomes simply not breaking the law. But when you have a fear of God, then and an understanding of natural law, or which is another term, not for scientific laws, but for natural law, meaning objective moral values and duties, that when society has that, then society can govern itself, and thus you can have a free society. And people like Ravi Zacharias, championed those ideas throughout their lives, founding ministries, traveling all over. That's so applicable to World News Brief. He's not just a Christian American hero. He was an Indian immigrant to America, but he traveled all over the world, ministering in 70 countries. He's truly a hero of the faith, and we just say, rest in peace, Ravi Zacharias, 1946-2020. Well, I am excited to see that the Senate just confirmed a fellow Texan to be the new Director of National Intelligence. Representative John Ratcliffe was confirmed to the Senate. He's from the District 04 of the great state of Texas, confirmed him. He was first nominated for the position by the president when the former intelligence director Dan Coats stepped down from the position at the end of July 2019. This is from The Texan that I'm reporting from. Every once in a while, I got to give a shout out to my home state. Several leaders in Congress from Texas, including Senators John Cornyn and Ted Cruz, voiced their support for his nomination. But Trump withdrew the nomination after several lawmakers questioned Ratcliffe's qualifications for the position and his partisan leanings. Well, I mean, did James Clapper not have any partisan leanings? I don't know. I mean, was James Clapper purely objective? I'm just asking the question. I'll let you make up your own mind. In the interim, two acting DNIs were appointed by Trump, Joseph McGuire, from August 16th to February 20th, and then U.S. Ambassador to Germany, Richard Grenell, from February 20th to present. How about Grenell? How about Grenell and the work that he has been doing, declassifying all kinds of interesting information? I'm not going to get into all that. This is not the show for that. There are a million other shows that you can listen to get that. However, he has been bold. He has responded quickly to requests by Republican congressmen to declassify stuff, and we're seeing and apparently inching closer and closer to the understanding that Crossfire Hurricane, the operation to spy on the Trump campaign, the operation to spy on a political opponent, is being exposed in an incredible way all the way to the very top. So that will be very interesting to watch and see what all comes from that. All that takes a long time, unfortunately, but it does appear like we're getting closer, so we'll see. In February, Trump once again nominated Ratcliffe for the position. I wanted to share this quick video from Catherine Herridge, where he responds to questions from critics on the suitability of the job. So let's listen in.
In his first television interview since the announcement, Texas Congressman Republican John Ratcliffe pushed back against charges he's not qualified to lead the intelligence agencies.
I've been handling national security issues as far back as 2005.
But critics say you've never held a job in the intelligence community.
I think what we've seen is that some of our most experienced intelligence officials have gotten it wrong with respect to important issues.
I want you to respond to critics who say President Trump puts loyalty ahead of experience.
My experience as a U.S. attorney on national security issues, as a legislator almost exclusively in these areas, that was important to him. Loyalty, what we've talked about, is my loyalty to the Constitution.
Ratcliffe was a passionate defender of the president during the Russia probe and more recently impeachment. He was among the first to flag irregularities in the surveillance of a Trump campaign aide.
I've had a very public role, and I've demonstrated that I've been right on some of these most important issues.
Ratcliffe was tapped last summer for the job, but it was withdrawn after allegations he padded his resume.
What's changed?
I reconsidered because the president asked me, and I think when the president asks you to do something for your country, you look at that. Just because someone in your business accuses you doesn't make it true.
The chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, Adam Schiff, called him unqualified.
Wow. Can you get through the confirmation process?
I think that I'll have the support of all Republicans at the end of the day. I'm going to work hard to convince at least some of my Democratic colleagues on the other side of the aisle.
Well, unfortunately, that didn't happen because it was a strict 49-44 vote on party lines. For one, I mean, look, anything. Adam Schiff came out and lied to the nation about the transcript with the Ukrainian president. Just flat out lied. Creating this fictional, this like anti-fan fiction of a conversation between Trump and President Zelensky. So you know what? I really don't care what Adam Schiff says about someone being untrustworthy or someone being not qualified. He blatantly lied to the American people. And when he was called out by it from none other than George Stephanopoulos, he kind of just does this smirk and goes, well, I didn't speak, you know, exactly correctly. Or I kind of regret. After it had been in the news cycle for 3-4 days and everybody had already heard the lies where he made Trump look like a gangster. I mean, just a flat out gangster. In his conversation with the Ukrainian president, when you go and read the transcript, it is no such thing. Say, well, he wanted them to investigate Biden. Well, so it's wrong for one political opponent to investigate another political opponent? Is that what you're saying? Crossfire hurricane would be my only response. Now let's go to China. I don't think that we should be viewing China than anything other than what it is, which is a threat. They are a geopolitical foe, and they are a geopolitical threat. But I throw out the term soft power a lot because I believe in soft power. I don't believe in sending our troops over and thousands dying like we saw in the first part of the 21st century, which has just been was a total disaster, whether it's Iraq or Afghanistan. We try to overthrow these Middle East dictators, and what do we get as a result? We overthrew Gaddafi, and what do we get as a result? ISIS and Al-Qaeda and these groups that are just flooded. It's a disaster. Libya is a disaster. Was Gaddafi a good guy? No, he was awful. Just because there's a dictator that's awful doesn't mean that we send thousands, tens of thousands of troops over somewhere to dispose of them. That's flat out, which is why I do not support war with Iran, but I do support war with Iran. The war that I support is a soft power, diplomatic, economic, propaganda warfare against them. But sending our troops over there, thousands upon thousands, to die, to dispose of these bad dudes, I simply don't. Especially not at this point. Now, if they launch a full-on attack on one of our allies, such as Israel, well then, you know, that decision has to be made then. But other than that, we're not just going to go around and be the police of the world and topple all these dictators, have thousands of our young men and women die, and then something worse arise out of the rubble. Well, so China also believes in soft power. And they're doing it in a way that maybe a lot of us don't realize. I just recently have learned about an organization that's all across North America. And this organization has many chapters. Where do they have these chapters? Well, you could argue that college campuses are of any institution you would want that you would want to be able to infiltrate and persuade and get your message out to, it's college campuses. Because these are the future leaders, the future intellectual leaders that then go out in their various fields of disciplines. Well, China knows this. They're not stupid. They're propaganda artists. I mean, they are. They have just been, and I'm not going to touch on this, but I don't know if you've seen the news, how they have just literally told their diplomats that you guys are, I don't know what exactly they've said, but their diplomats are acting in a very confrontational, not backing down way. They are propaganda warfare specifically against America. If you have any doubt who the Chinese want to win in 2020, You really shouldn't. I mean, who do you think they can more easily control, Joe Biden or Donald Trump? Tied, but this is good news. I've got good news today, and I love sharing good news. I hope you like good news, because we need some of that, because we have to understand one of the themes of this show has become evil is not inevitable. Tide turns against Beijing-backed Confucius Institutes on American campuses. This is from the Epoch Times. By the way, I love the Epoch Times. This isn't a sponsorship or anything like that, but they just have incredible reporting, especially on China. Another thing I love about the Epoch Times is that they give you, yeah, I mean, they educate you, you know, if it's like China Gate or, Unmasking Gate or the Russia collusion scandal and all that. They have these summaries that kind of educate you on it all. It's a really, really great, paper. But the tide turns against Beijing-backed Confucius Institutes on American campuses. Have you heard of Confucius Institutes? I hadn't until recently. I didn't even know they existed. A growing number of Confucius Institutes are closing across U.S. college campuses amid concerns over their threats to academic freedom. Now, why would Confucius Institutes? I mean, Confucius, wasn't this an enlightened, peaceful, spiritual guy? Well, some think so, and the Chinese know that a lot of people think so. And so if they are going to want to infiltrate college campuses with their ideology and with their propaganda, and they know Westerners were such dupes for foreign propaganda, naming it the Confucius Institute was a brilliant move. Just because they're evil doesn't mean they're not smart. While billed as Chinese language and culture centers, we're a diverse culture. Yes, a language and a culture center where we just learn from one another and we just coexist, bumper sticker, coexist with one another. A language and culture center, very nice. Beijing funded. Yeah, so you're dealing with the Chinese Communist Party here, not just some separate religious group that wants to bring peace and enlightenment to the campus. Beijing-funded Confucius Institutes have drawn mounting criticism in the U.S. and elsewhere over its role in stifling free speech and promoting Chinese propaganda and influence in academic institutions. Since 2004, more than 100 Confucius Institutes have opened in universities across the U.S., although this number has diminished in recent years as a rising number of colleges shutter the controversial centers, many have done so as a result of a measure in the National Defense Authorization Act of 2018, which bars universities that host Confucius Institutes from receiving funding from the Pentagon. So, if you hold these Confucius Institutes on your campus, no funding from the Pentagon. I think that's the kind of stuff that we need to continue to see. If you do business with Iran, no funding. If you do business here, no, you know, to where we financially and economically attack our opponents and those who seek to undermine the United States of America. We have to be smart about it. In some ways, we have to be nuanced about it. But if these Confucius Institutes are really as diabolical as they seem to be, what are we doing supporting them? Of course, when it comes to government spending on organizations, I mean, I am very, very fiscally conservative going, why is my money going to this? Why is my money going to PBS? Why is my money going to this art institute or whatever? Why is my money going to illegal immigrants? It's absolutely amazing. Lincoln was right. The only way America can be destroyed is if we destroy ourselves. And America, as well as many Western nations, literally just, it seems like most of their time in government is spent tying their own nooses. As of May, 38 universities had closed or in the process of closing their institutes, according to the National Association of Scholars, an education advocacy group. By the end of the summer, there will be 80 institutes left in the country. Quote, Confucius Institutes import censorship into American higher education, said Rochelle Peterson, policy director at NAS, told Epoch Times. They are inherently at odds with the intellectual freedom that a college or university requires, which wouldn't be a big surprise, given the fact that it is funded and promoted by the Chinese Communist Party. It's under the auspices of them. They are in charge of these Confucius Institutes. So now let's talk about importing censorship, right? How do they do that? So Confucius Institutes are a class in a box. They're class in a box kits from the Chinese regime, which supplies the host university with teachers and their salaries, teaching materials, as well as funding to run the center. So look, you've got this. I mean, think about how this can be appealing, especially to colleges and universities who have totally subscribed to woke culture. Here, you can have, you don't even have to pay for it. We provide it for you, a cultural and language center. We give you the teachers. We provide the money and everything. It's just all, it's all done for you. And you get to have this whole other wing, this whole other organization, a cultural and language center, by which you can look even more woke than you already are. So I could see how that would be appealing. However, if it's a group that is undermining our country, it's a whole different story. The 2017 NAS report authored by Peterson, which recommended the closure of all Confucius Institutes in the U.S., highlighted the center's role in presenting a positive image of the communist regime. Of course, that's what they're going to do. Quote, they avoid Chinese political history and human rights abuses. Our friend Mr. Zacharias was just talking about that very thing. Tiananmen Square, right? Portray Taiwan and Tibet as undisputed territories of China and educate a generation of American students to know nothing more of China than the regime's official history. No big surprise that Tibet and Taiwan, to them, are they're just part of China, which we're going to get to that in just a second, a little spat about that between us and them. The institutes are funded and operated by Hanban, or Hanban, however you say it, H-A-N-B-A-N, or the Office of Chinese Language Council International, an office within China's Ministry of Education. We literally have Chinese Communist Party-funded organizations on our college campuses that are there to undermine Western values, undermine reality, and to basically raise a generation of college kids that are sympathetic with this autocratic, horrific regime in China that, remember, persecutes religious believers by the millions. By the millions. They do not have freedom of speech. They do not have freedom of religion. They do not have freedom of the press. They do not have the right to bear arms. It's absolutely Christians. They're true believers over there, have to be underground. And even Muslims. They got about a million Uyghur Muslims in concentration camp style holding. So this is just, this regime is an abominable regime who has world ambitions, and there is absolutely no place for this type of propaganda to be on our college campuses. Absolutely no. There's no justification for this. Since 2006, Hanban has poured more than $158 million to about 100 U.S. universities for Confucius Institutes, according to a 2019 U.S. State Subcommittee on Investigations report. Between 2008 and 2016, Hanban spent more than $2 billion on setting up such institutes on college campuses around the world. $2 billion setting up these Confucius Institutes around the world. So let me just ask the obvious question here. If this is what the Chinese Communist Party is doing, if they're spending billions of dollars on this, you're going to tell me that they're just doing it for language and cultural enlightenment? No. They have ambitions far beyond their borders. Outside of higher education, there are 512 Confucius classrooms operating in K to 12 grade schools in the United States. Ladies and gentlemen, this is not okay. They're not content with just going after the college kids. They want our children's minds as young as possible. And how dare any of these institutions, how dare they accept Chinese communist propaganda into their schools? How dare they do that to our kids? That is, if your kids are schooled in some are public schooled or private schooled, I would strongly suggest looking into whether or not there's a Confucius classroom operating in your school. I will have the link to this report in the show notes at cgmradio.com/world, in the show notes of this podcast or in cgmradio.com/world. It is, if you have one of these, this is the kind of stuff that needs to be taken to the school, because this report from the Epoch Times has the proof in there, has the reports, has the primary source information you need to make your case to the school, and that these Confucius institutes do not align with our values at all. I mean, unless the people in charge of your school happen to be communists, and they very well may be. But even if they are, they need to be confronted about this. And along with that, I would recommend bringing some documentation about Chinese human rights abuses and those that the Chinese props up. 512 Confucius classrooms operating in grade schools in the U.S. No! Chinese officials themselves have remarked that Confucius institutes are a key plank in the Chinese Communist Party's campaign to expand its global influence. The CCP's then propaganda chief Li Changchun in 2009 described Confucius institutes as, quote, an important part of China's overseas propaganda setup. They're not even hiding it. They're not even hiding that that's what these are. Later, in a 2011 speech, he extolled the centers as an, quote, appealing brand for extending our culture abroad. An appealing brand for extending our culture abroad. Indeed. Indeed. I agree. It's smart. Quote, it has made an important contribution toward improving our, what's the term of the week, ladies and gentlemen? Soft power. The quote, Confucius brand has a natural attractiveness. Using the excuse of teaching Chinese language, everything looks reasonable and logical, Li said at the time. So they're not even hiding it. They've said publicly that this is a propaganda campaign, plain and simple. In 2013, McMaster University, which is in Ontario, Canada, became the first university in North America to close its Confucius Institute. After Sonia Zhao, she was a Chinese teacher at the Confucius Institute at McMaster, who quit and defected to Canada, filed a complaint at the, because if she had gone back to China, she'd been toast, filed a complaint at the Human Rights Tribunal of Ontario over its discriminatory hiring practices. Spokesperson for the university said that the decision was made because, quote, hiring decisions in China were not being done the way we would want to do the hiring. Zhao revealed at the time that during her training in Beijing, they were told to avoid mentioning sensitive topics like Tiananmen Square massacre, Tibet, Taiwan, and Falun Gong in the classroom. However, if a student insists on a question, the teachers have to cite the CCP line on the issues, such as Taiwan is part of China and Tibet has been, quote, liberated by the regime. So there is no freedom of expression. There is no freedom of thought. the Confucius Institutes are Chinese propaganda machines, and they need to be defeated. Speaking of defeating China, look, I will never get tired of telling you guys good news. The gospel itself, the very message of Christianity, is good news. And so I like good news. I like winning. Are any of us, when we see, if you are a Trump supporter and you see Trump win, do you get tired of that? Do you get tired of seeing that news? Do you get tired of hearing that? No, I know maybe bad news gets more clicks, but I don't care. When there's good news, I like to report it, especially as it relates to our greatest geopolitical foe. Who's second? I think you could probably argue Iran. I can't think of a greater geopolitical second place than Iran, who is the world's largest state sponsor of terror, and who is partnered with China. So our greatest political foes are partnered together. But this is good news. U.S. to sell Taiwan $180 million of torpedoes, angering China. So whenever China is upset, we should be happy, right? We should be happy because that means they are being confronted. And look, I know I said we weren't going to talk about COVID, but if we think for a second they aren't thrilled, and if we think for a second that they weren't behind all of this, look, I think we're fooling ourselves. You think they're not happy that they through this virus brought America's record-breaking economy to a screeching halt? Now it's looking like we have about 16% unemployment officially. I mean, just thousands of businesses, even big businesses now, that are being shuttered. We literally have, we have tyranny in New York City, tyranny in Michigan, tyranny in Los Angeles and in California. We've even had some tyranny here in Texas. It's unreal. Now, we've opened up quicker in some ways, but it kind of took long enough. But we have now, because of this virus, also seen tyranny on an unprecedented level. Oh, inconveniently, the protesting in Taiwan has stopped. They've gone in and they've rounded up activists. We've seen protests in Iran stop, which is good news for China because they are allies. They are allies together, China and Iran. We're seeing socialism implemented in unbelievable ways. What has been the Democrat plan? Remember, California has had been engaging in a test run where, you know, I believe it was about 1,000 people just get paid a salary. We're just going to tell 1,000 people not to work, get paid a salary, and let's just see how it goes. Well, I mean, what do you think those 1,000 people are going to say? No, this was a terrible idea. No, this was awful. Stop doing this. So when you have, and not only that, what are you also getting? You're also getting the talk of mandatory vaccines going around. It's like everything, whatever the leftist wish list is, and that would include China, is all happening. Their wish list is happening. They love tyranny. What was the mayor of Los Angeles just said that their people are going to have to earn their freedom back through their actions. Earn their freedom back. Are you kidding me? And you have the governor of Michigan that just comes out and is just the type of things that she's said to her people. And then you've got the unbelievable rampant hypocrisy of it all, like Dallas County Judge Clay Jenkins, who obviously got a haircut and got his hair dyed. You have just an unbelievably amount of representatives. You got De Blasio going to the gym, or was it De Blasio or Cuomo, one of those guys who said, don't go to the gym, and then they go to the gym. He's like, well, I got to go to the gym to be healthy. Really? But that's how leftism works, whether it's they believe in school choice for their own kids going to private schools, but they don't want school choice for your kids. They want themselves to be surrounded by men with guns, but they don't want you to be able to protect yourself with a firearm. They want to get the very best health care. So what do? They exempt themselves from Obamacare. All of you have to get health care, have to be on Obamacare, but we're exempted. Remember that congressman that wrote a bill saying if you vote for Obamacare, you also have to be on the plan? That didn't go over very well. Travel choice. They want all of us in little Priuses while they fly around on private jets. Like I just said, hair choice. Even hair choice. Like they want to be able to go get haircuts, but your hair salons are closed because they're not safe. But yet Walmart and Costco and Kroger, those are safe because those are essential businesses. Or where in Los Angeles, they're going to open up pet grooming facilities in Los Angeles, but they are going to, but everything else is shut down. I mean, talk about pandering and catering to the ruling elitist class. You open the pet salon so the ladies in Beverly Hills can, you know, take their $10,000 chihuahua to go get manicured or whatever. I mean, it's truly, truly remarkable. They were talking about that on Charlie Kirk's podcast. That's what we're up against. Even vacation home. Did you see the story about Gretchen Whitmer, the governor of Michigan, saying people can't go to their vacation homes? This was reported by the Gateway Pundit, but literally their cars were outside their vacation home. It is just the hypocrisy and the evil simply does not end. See, I absolutely love the Chinese people. And I'm not saying this just to be, you know, to qualify anything. I absolutely love the Chinese people. There are hundreds of millions of Christians over there that are just, that love God, that love Christ, and are doing the work of the gospel under unbelievably dangerous circumstances, many of them dying for their faith as a result. I don't just love the Christians, I love them all. And it's because I love them all. The Chinese Communist Party must be defeated. No question. And it's their ideology, which aligns with the left, which is why the left, for decades, has been so pro-China, allowing them to rake us over the coals on these terrible trade deals, allowing them to export our manufacturing overseas. I hope if there's one good thing, there are many good things actually that's going to come out of all this. I'm very optimistic about the whole COVID thing. Very optimistic. Well, but I think you can be optimistic and still fight tyranny. You can still thank God for all the good that comes out of this while still fighting tyranny. You can do that. But I think one of the biggest things that I hope to come out of this is that we bring our manufacturing back from China, and I think we're going to see that. And it's really disheartening when you try to find stuff made in America. You go online or whatever, you search for something made in America. It's difficult. Everything is made in China. It is a crime. It is a crime that our politicians, Republican and Democrat, allowed that to happen. Oh, Ryan, you're a protectionist. You don't believe in trade, whatever. No. Well, I am a protectionist in one sense, and that just like China tries to do good deals for their nation, we need to do good deals for our nation, right? That's what America First is. Again, like I talked about last week, America First is not to heck with the rest of the world. America First means we actually take care of ourselves. That when we sit down and do trade deals, if China's going to have a 25% tariff on our stuff, we're going to slap one right back. Oh, Trump started a trade war? Because he put a tariff to counter China's tariffs? Couldn't you say that China started the war and simply that Trump is fighting it? It's ludicrous. It's disgusting. And beyond the manufacturing, one of the things that I really hope comes out of this is that we see, as Americans, we see the Chinese Communist Party the same way we saw the Politburo of the USSR in the Cold War. And essentially, we are in a Cold War with China right now. I'm seeing people write about that. We're in a Cold War with them right now. And just like we defeated the Soviet Union without firing a shot, we can do the same with the Chinese Communist Party. How long it would last, how difficult would it be, I don't know. But we got to start with at least not messing ourselves over by terrible trade deals and terrible practices. Oh, I was going to talk about torpedoes, wasn't I? Yes, torpedoes. The U.S. government has notified Congress of a possible sale of advanced torpedoes to Taiwan worth around $800 million, further souring already tense ties between Washington and Beijing, which claims Taiwan as Chinese territory. The United States, like most countries, has no official diplomatic ties with Taiwan. I think we should change that. But is bound by law to provide the Democratic Island with the means to defend itself. China routinely denounces U.S. arms sales to Taiwan. Of course, they're tyrants. They don't want Taiwan to be free. They do not want Taiwan to be free. Leftists cannot handle other people living in freedom. Like the Berlin Wall that separated East and West Germany from those who were there at the time said, you could look on the east side of the wall. And you saw socialism. You saw tyranny. You saw oppression. Look on the west side of the wall. You see people going about with their lives. You see commerce. You see families. You see just general overall happiness. The Soviet Union did not want that wall to fall. They wanted as many people under their miserable, decrepit thumbs as possible. Leftists are the same way. That's just how leftists are. China, you've got this huge country. You have this incredible country. What do you care about little Taiwan for? Let them just kind of do their own little thing. No. Tyrants are going to do their tyrant thing. They love to oppress. That's what they love to do. And so they're not going to be happy with Taiwan being armed at all. That's why the left is not happy with American citizens being armed, because they know that the more people are armed, the less power that they have over them, which is why the New Orleans mayor was focused on, which of course she's following in her predecessor, Ray Nagin, on attempting to kind of shut down arms sales and gun stores and so forth, which is crazy because in times like these, people need those weapons more than ever to protect themselves. But that's the way. But it's not about saving the most number of lives. It is about gaining as much power as possible. So when things don't make sense, and it's very easy for rational people to go through, to wonder about the actions of some members of our government and going, why in the world are they doing this? And you go through it in your head, you're like, how? And you talk about it with others, and you're like, this makes no sense. And it's very easy to get worked up about all of that. Just understand, it doesn't make sense. It simply doesn't make sense. Remember, the scripture says in the book of James that the wisdom of God is reasonable and it's pure, full of mercy and good fruit. That is not the way leftism works. It's not based off of rationality. It's based off of power and accumulating as much power as possible. That's why here in the COVID nonsense, that they don't care how many small businesses shut down, or even larger businesses apparently now. They don't care that it makes no sense that Shelley Luther's salon in Dallas is like 8 million times more sanitary than Walmart, and they can social distance a whole lot easier there than at Walmart. I was there. They had a line out the door. I reported on that on my YouTube channel. I interviewed her. You can check it out. I'll put a link in the show notes. But people were spaced out every 6 feet. They had two salon owners in there, two hairstylists in there. Very easy to social distance in a hair salon. Most of the time, you are social distance naturally in a hair salon because they're typically not packed. See, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. And so I would encourage you, if you do this, stop trying to make it make sense, because it doesn't. You can't. It's an impossible task. It's insane reasoning. There really is no reasoning. The left is all about power. And it doesn't matter if the suicide rate spikes. It doesn't matter. That doesn't matter. If the suicide rates spike, which they are very, 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 very sadly. Well, don't they care about them? They talk about how they care about lives. Well, how come they only... Look, it doesn't make sense. It simply doesn't make sense. They're not worried about that. Those suicides don't inhibit their power grab. If they did, they would want to stop it. If they could utilize those suicides in some way to increase their power, if they bring an awareness to those suicides, increase their power, well, then they would. But they don't, so they don't care. So we're selling torpedoes. We're in process of selling torpedoes to Taiwan, which is awesome in multiple ways because it's helping them and it's helping us. If there's one thing we need right now is economic activity, right? In Beijing, though, Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman Zhao Lijian said China has lodged, quote, solemn representations with Washington about the planned sale. China urged the U.S. to stop all arms sales to and military ties with Taiwan to prevent further damage to Sino-U.S. relations, Zhao added. The U.S. announcement came on the same day Taiwan President Tsai Ing-wen was sworn in for her second term in office, saying she strongly rejected China's sovereignty claims. China responded that, quote, reunification was inevitable and that it would never tolerate Taiwan's independence. It would never tolerate Taiwan's independence. Leftists cannot handle the freedom that others enjoy because those in power believe that they are the ones that should be free. They are the ones that should have money. They are the ones that should be rich. Nobody else. It's kind of like the movement right now for the new California state. I'm not sure if you've heard of that or not, but check it out. It'll be very interesting to see as that proposal moves forward if leftists are the leftists that run California are even willing to consider that, because even if it was a deal that was good for them to split California, a lot of times I wonder, would they rather I think I know that they would rather preside over more misery than preside over less land in a more prosperous situation. I don't know. So, speaking of the president of Taiwan, this is from The Hill. China threatens countermeasures after Pompeo congratulates Taiwan president on second term. I love it. I love it when, you know, we hear the term politically correct. There's another term I'd like to introduce, diplomatically correct. Oh, well, that's not diplomatically correct. Well, is it in our interests? Then maybe it is diplomatically correct. Maybe it is what we should be doing diplomatically. China threatened to take, quote, countermeasures against the U.S. after Secretary of State Mike Pompeo congratulated Taiwan's president on starting a second term in office. So let's check out what Mr. Zhao had to say.
This seriously violates the One China principle and the Three China-U.S. joint communiques, interfere in China's internal affairs. China is indignant and condemns that. China will take necessary countermeasures, and the consequences will be borne by the U.S. side.
Oh, no. Express strong indignation and condemnation. China will take necessary countermeasures, and the consequences will be borne by the U.S. side. Well, we'll see how that goes. The Wednesday warning came after Pompeo touted the relationship between Washington and Taipei under the leadership of President Tsai Ing-wen. Quote, Pompeo said, "Congratulations to Dr. Tsai Ing-wen on the commencement of your second term as Taiwan's president. Taiwan's vibrant democracy is an inspiration to the region and the world. With President Tsai at the helm, our partnership with Taiwan will continue to flourish." And I think as long as the Trump administration continues to be bold with China and do the right thing with China, they themselves will flourish all the way through November 5th. Let's go back to our roots. This is episode 6 of World News Brief, but before that, we had 44 episodes of Mideast News Brief. COVID changed things, and I wanted to be able to talk about China. But, you know, as diabolical and awful as the Iranian regime is, sometimes even they surprise me. And I've been following this regime for a while, especially with doing Mideast News Brief. And let me tell you, this was a little shocking when I saw that Iran's supreme leader on Twitter releases a anti-Israel final solution poster. The poster, which if you look at it, I tweeted it and commented on it on my Twitter at World News CGM. At World News CGM, I'm there on Twitter and Facebook. But it, I mean, if you notice it, it's amazing. Of course, the most prominently displayed person, even more so than Ayatollah Khomeini, the founder of the 1979 Iranian Revolution, is General Qasem Soleimani, who, as you know, was destroyed by order of Trump early January in response to his attack or his proxy group's attack on one of our bases in Iraq. It literally says, "Palestine will be free. The final solution, resistance until referendum." The final solution, which was Hitler's term for the extermination of the Jewish people. The poster was released from Khomeini's office to celebrate Quds Day, the annual Iranian regime rally calling for Israel's destruction. So let's get a few responses. Rabbi Abraham Cooper, associate dean of the Simon Wiesenthal Center, told Jerusalem Post, quote, "Fanatic Jew-hating Ayatollah and company inspired by Nazi antecedents. Awaiting protests from Berlin and Vienna." I'm pretty sure that was said sarcastically. The Jerusalem Post contacted German Chancellor Angela Merkel's administration, including her Federal Commissioner to Combat Antisemitism, Felix Klein, for a comment. I guess as of that writing, they hadn't gotten one. Yeah, when you're trying to do business with the devil, when you're literally trying to stay in business with the devil himself, things can get a little sticky. Iran's regime is considered the top state sponsor of anti-Semitism and Holocaust denial by ADL National Director Jonathan Greenblatt. Remember, he used to be Trump's special envoy for Middle East negotiations. Iran's regime is, Yu Becker, president of the pro-Israel NGO, the German Israel Friendship Society, told the Post that, quote, "While suppressing their own people, The Mullah regime in Tehran is proclaiming freedom for the Palestinians in order to continue the path to destroy the Jewish state. As long as Tehran is denying the right of existence of Israel, and as long as they are continuing to attack directly or indirectly Israeli families, the EU should freeze the relations with the Iranian regime, he said. No pillars of relations should stand on poisoned ground. The Iranian regime is constantly fighting against the state of Israel and its existence. So their foreign minister, Pompeo's counterpart, Javad Zarif, also known as the smiling diplomat, which, because we saw him smiling all the time as they were putting together the terrible Iranian nuclear deal, Javad Zarif is smiling and happy all the time. See, he knows how much a smile can disarm people, no pun intended. But here's what, so people obviously responded rather vehemently. There was quite the uproar to that very Hitler-esque image that was posted on Twitter. Amazingly, the Ayatollah still has a Twitter account. Imagine that. The Ayatollah still has a Twitter account, even though he posted an image that used Nazi language against the Jews. So let's censor James Woods and let's censor Milo, but genocidal, lunatic, Jew-hating, Israel destruction maniac like Ayatollah Khomeini? It's just kind of what they do. You got to understand, it's just their culture, and you know, that we can't expect them to be enlightened as us. We have to give those Iranians some time to catch up. It really is it's the racism of low expectations is what that is right there. So here's what Javad Zarif responded with. He said, "Disgusting that those whose civilization found a, quote, final solution in gas chambers attack those who seek a real solution at the ballot box through a referendum. Why are U.S. and West so afraid of democracy? Oh my gosh. Palestinians should not have to pay for your crimes or for your guilt." So his point was like, look, we weren't talking about the extermination of Jews. We were talking about a referendum, a ballot box. Yet, well, a couple things there. They used explicit Nazi language. The title for the destruction of the Jews. About the Jews. They didn't use the final solution in reference to some other country around the world about defeating them at their ballot box. They were specifically talking about the Jewish state, because it says Palestine will be free, and they consider what Israel is now to be Palestine. Now, interestingly, originally Palestine, that region, is not only Israel, but also Jordan. Those two together made up Palestine. So, but right now, according to the world, Palestine only refers to the area, rather conveniently, right, that the Jews occupy. If Palestine shall be free, and if Palestine belongs to this race that just came about in the 1960s called the Palestinians, well, then Jordan needs to be giving their land to the Palestinians as well. However, I don't see any UN resolutions on that one anytime soon. It's absolutely incredible that he's, of course, it's his job to justify it, but to claim that this is all about democracy is ludicrous. The Iranian elections are a sham. The vast majority of Iranians do not want this terrible regime, and which is why I am just hoping and praying for regime change. But let's listen to what Pompeo, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, had to say as a result on Twitter. He said, "Incredible that @JZarif and Iran's supreme leader are echoing Hitler's call for genocide. This depravity should dispel any notion the regime belongs in the community of nations. It doesn't. Are you going to give ISIS a seat at the table at the UN? Are you going to give Al-Qaeda a seat at the table at the UN? Then why are you giving Iran, who is in charge of terrorist groups all over the world? I wonder if ISIS actually succeeded in their caliphate in establishing a nation, I guarantee you they would have eventually been invited to the UN. I mean, Iran's there, and they're a terrorist state. Why not ISIS? Why, because they're just more brutal? It's amazing. We stand with Germany and Israel against this oldest and most vile form of hatred. Amen. Amen. So I want to get to one more piece of news. This will be in the show notes, but I'm going to hit it briefly. Mahmoud Abbas, who is the president of the Palestinian Authority, quote, president, he's been, quote, president of this, quote, democracy since 2004. So, you know, you do the math there, of a four-year term, but it's just kind of one of those four-year terms that never really ended. You know, it's just, you know, some four-year terms stop after 4 years, others kind of keep going. Well, this one kind of kept going. This is from Israel Hayom. Palestinian Authority leader Mahmoud Abbas said on Tuesday that he was terminating all agreements with Israel and the United States over Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's plan to extend Israeli law to parts of Judea and Samaria under the aegis of the Trump peace plan. So, all of that to say, he's talking a lot of smack. It's not going to happen. They're not going to completely get rid of their security and somehow not work with Israel anymore. It's just simply not happening. Even one Palestinian official said, quote, Abbas is trying to bring Gantz to the negotiating table. There is no intention here to dismantle the Palestinian Authority and restore Israeli control over the West Bank. That's not a practical move. We also don't fully understand the meaning of his announcement. I tend to believe the guy at this point, because it really was stupid. Abbas is—he's getting way up there in age, and I just—I don't expect a whole lot of rationality. This PA official was probably right. It really is just trying to get something to happen. But I found this other article. This is from the Jerusalem Center for Public Affairs. It's a fantastic video talking about, does the term annexation even apply? I mean, they're talking about Israel annexing the West Bank, but does that really apply at all? Is it annexation? We're just going to take over this land. And I just want to read a quote from Dory Gold, who is an expert at the Jerusalem Center for Public Affairs. It would be more correct not to use the term annexation, but rather the, quote, application of Israeli law to parts of the West Bank. The idea that the Jewish national home applied there was backed by much of the international community from San Remo onwards, who, by the way, we just actually just did the 100th anniversary of the San Remo conference in 1920. Even Article 80 of the UN Charter established that national rights from the period of the League of Nations carried over to the newly established United Nations. In 1920, British leadership under Prime Minister Lloyd George was pivotal in protecting Jewish national rights. Today, 100 years later, British leadership should follow that example. And I absolutely have to agree. Remember, Israel was originally promised what we know today as Israel, West Bank, Gaza, and Jordan. 77% was taken away, and then what was left over, they took half of that away. So there really is no question that this is not annexation. They're just merely applying their law to those parts of Israel that currently are not there, which is a good thing. for everybody involved, especially the Arab population. All right, well, that will do it for this week's edition of World News Brief by CGM Radio. Thank you so much for joining us. If you like the podcast, please consider giving us a 5-star rating on whatever app you listen in on, and make sure to subscribe as well. Also, email me, world@cgmradio.com. Follow me on Twitter and Facebook at @WorldNewsCGM. And remember, you can find links to all the articles discussed in the show at cgmradio.com/world or in the show notes of this podcast. And may His kingdom come and His will be done on earth as it is in heaven.